Dr. Lund was talking about, when the tape ended, she was talking about her experience at the Ohio State University as Associate Dean.
Yeah. We had over 140 faculty. This included about 100 extension agents who were out in the state as well as on campus. Our on-campus faculty were around 40. The school was third nationally in the number of PhDs that were awarded annually, and it involved it was involved in programs funded by USAID in India and in Brazil. And when I was there, I visited those programs in India and Brazil and reviewed them on executive visit. But in 1971, we had a meeting probably of one of our honoraries in which students came from all over this region to meet with us. And I gave a speech and also interfaced with them. And much to my surprise, one of those students went back to MSU, where she was a student, to recommend to Associate Provost Dorothy Arata that she had found the dean for the College of Human Ecology, which had a vacancy at that time. And Dorothy Arata told me later that this was the first time that the provost's office had ever had a student come and recommend someone for deanship. And I had some question about it, too. Dorothy called me, and I said, I've only been here 4 years. I'm not sure that I'm interested in moving at this time. And Dorothy said, well, the least you can do, you see, here we go again with Roy, and the least you can do is come and talk with me. And I said, okay, I will come and talk with you, but at my expense, not yours. I do not want to be beholden, and I will meet you in Detroit at the airport. And so I went with 11 pages of questions.
Only 11.
Which Dorothy was kind of surprised about. And she responded to most of my questions. And after that meeting, I received an invitation to come and interview for the position. And after much consideration, I finally agreed to do so. And I met the expectations of the interviewers, apparently. This position was offered, and I considered it, and then I accepted it. I joined MSU on January 1 of 1973. And the question is, what attracted me? Sometimes I wonder about it myself at this point. One of the things that attracted me was this was a mature college. It was established in 1896, and it had characteristics of maturity, which interested me. The faculty had just gone through a review of organization and program and directions and so forth, and I thought what they had come up with was both interesting and challenging, not only in content and in concept, but also in possible administrative structure. I also thought that maybe these new conceptualizations that they were putting forward might free the discipline from all of the old concepts and stigmatas attached to the old concept of home economics. It also appeared to be a pretty good environment for cooperation with other disciplines and units, because I met with several other deans and department chairpersons in other units, and they were very welcoming and indicated interest in interaction, which pleased me. There was very strong interest, evidenced by Provost Cantlin, in my coming, including indications of support, financial support from Central. There also was very strong, I met with the alumni, those who were able to come, and there was very strong alumni support. This was the first time that alumni had ever been asked to come and participate in the interviews. And I was interested in seeing what the alumni looked like and were they really interested and supportive, because the alumni are one of the primary sources for development fund money. They had a pretty respectable teaching and research and extension programs online. They could be improved, but they were respectable. A very significant student body and a hardworking faculty. They had usable facilities, not good, but usable, and there was improvement possible. And finally, they guaranteed me a parking space.
A real premium.
First things first.
Yeah. And the building where it's located is now. What was it called then?
It was called, it was changed to Human Ecology at that point. It was called Home Economics. It's always been called by its disciplinary name. Mm-hmm. But it was changed to Human Ecology at the point of change in 1970. You asked about the changes that I was able to stimulate or help pursue during the college, in the college during my tenure as a dean. And there's some things I need to talk to you about relative to significant administrative issues that occurred during the first 5 years of my administration. One thing that was extremely difficult to deal with was the concept of the college as being the women's program on campus, the women's program on campus. Much more difficult to deal with than the women's program label put on nursing. Also difficult to deal with was the concept of home economics as being domestic science, with all of that stereotypic perception by everyone, including out in the state as well as on campus, versus the concepts espoused in Human Ecology, which was the changeover into a new perception. There was a perception among students that courses were no-brainers, which was not true, but there was that perception, and we had some that were no-brainers. There also was, relative to this, lower salaries for our faculty, and lower salaries and opportunities for graduates. I can give you an example. In child development, one of the courses at that time was nursery school, a nursery school teacher or preschool teacher. After a student had studied for 4 years at a cost of somewhere between $25,000 to $30,000, they then graduated no matter at what level in their class and went out to a job that paid $9,000 a year. That was unacceptable, unacceptable. But the American public supports and does not support some efforts. And preschool education at that time was not supported by the American public. It is a little better now, but it's still not good. And we had several of those kinds of careers that people went into, and I would have parents call me and ask me, how come? And I had very little way to explain to them that I too was confused about this. And that I rarely recommended that students, when students came to talk to me, I told them about this so that when they made their decision, they knew that in the context they were making their decision. I think you can make a decision that is not wise, but it has to be with knowledge. We had an enrollment swell in the college between 1970 and 1974. Now, I arrived in 1973, and we had a 144% increase in students, undergraduate students. We had an undergraduate student body of 2,200 students, undergraduate students, which was about 700 more than we could handle. One of the reports that I wrote, I remember reading this phrase, at the same time other units of higher education are observing severe drops in enrollments and a lessening in interest in program offerings, we are experiencing a rapid increase in enrollments and a clamoring demand for our programs. At the moment we gain full competitive advantage, the bank closes. What amazing irony. Because this was the time when funding began to diminish, and so there was less and less funding, even though we had more and more need for it.
Can you think of any other, right at that time, what attracted students to the field?
I think it was the change in the perception and the promise. There was a change that we were, the students and faculty and so forth were told this was a new college, was a new concept, and new preparations for careers, and so students came. They thought of it as having opportunity, and there was. I mean, I'm not the...
And the funding in the 70s was still tied to agriculture, and some of that had diminished?
Funding, particularly in research and in extension. Funding for general education programs, like academic programs, primarily through the university, but there was a continuing tie, perceptually. In other words, if it wasn't really consistent with a frame of reference that was kind of agricultural, then it wasn't fundable. But the money didn't come from ag,
mm-hmm. right.
on that sector. Mm-hmm. We had a gradual decline in undergraduate enrollments after 1975. In part because we tried to do some management of students. And so eventually we got to an enrollment around 1,500 undergraduates and 250 graduates. And that was, we were able to handle that with the students, with the faculty we had. There were some faculty shortfalls. The numbers were inadequate for student enrollments, I commented on that. But the proportion of faculty holding terminal degrees, that is a PhD degree, was lower than it should be. And the proportion of faculty experienced in research and doing research was low. We had very limited research funding. The research funding was primarily coming from AES, from the Agriculture Experiment Station. And so that certain sectors received funding, like nutrition and the food-related sector, but other sectors did not. There was very little action by faculty to seek outside funding for research. And because of all this, there was very limited refereed publications. And when you have those things, then you have faculty salaries that are lower. They were non-competitive, both on and off campus. Then this was a time when the money was being withdrawn. The legislature was cutting back on funding for all programs in the university. And there was a very significant loss of operational and academic program dollars. And that retrenchment was felt very severely in the college. It was not well funded to begin with. And then when the promises of the provost to support did not come through, except for parking space, that was felt very sharply. So what you had, when you had this great swell of students, was a tremendous loss of personal time and of professional time, and especially research time. Faculty simply were consumed by being within the classroom, meeting, being a warm body in front of students. Then I also found that no attention had been paid to the development of an endowment or a gift fund program. The 1973, when I arrived, the development program for the College of Human Ecology was $13,000. Then we had another issue that surfaced, and that was the administrative structure of the college as designed by the faculty. This was a time, in the late 60s, was a time when there was a love affair with interdisciplinarity, that there should be, everything should be done teamwork-wise, everything should be done in an interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary fashion, that research should be many people working together towards a common focus, and so forth and so on. The college was designed with three departments that were essentially discipline-based. One was food science and human nutrition. One was family and child sciences. And one was human environment and design. All of these, which had to do with housing and external, like clothing and so forth and so on. These three departments had a definitive focus within themselves. Then there was a third department, which was called family ecology. And family ecology department was designed as a multidisciplinary unit, drawing FTEs on a contributed basis from each of the other three departments. And these faculty were to teach in FE and do research on an interdisciplinary mode within FE. The family ecology department was defined as serving, and I'm quoting, the key integrating function within the college. Now, there were many units, not just human ecology, that were established with this kind of a concept during those years. There was a kind of a love affair with this kind of thinking. But this concept, which developed in our college in the late 60s, was approved by the faculty in 1970. But it was conceptually late in arriving from a U.S. standpoint. And it was found in time to be non-functional. Conceptually interesting, family ecology could function only if faculty were willing to share significant time to participate in interdisciplinarity. And participating in interdisciplinarity requires more time than individual participation. Vastly more time. Now, the university environment was verbally supportive to ID work, but was non-supportive reward and promotion-wise. Now, faculty are not stupid. They wised up eventually to the fact that rewards, financial and rank, were dependent on individual achievements and documentation of such. And in reality, very few of these multidisciplinary efforts were recognized anyplace other than verbally. And at the present time, they're being done away with even now. You have one within your college, which is under review at the present time, as I understand, which is of that same nature. And it is a real problem. So over time, faculty and departmental support for the administrative structure of FE just simply eroded. And in 1979, the faculty of FE recommended and voted to terminate their department. And this recommendation was forwarded to me for action by the college. And there was full faculty or college support supporting the recommendation. It was forwarded to the university, and it was supported by the university. So FCS, the Family and Child Sciences, became Family and Child Ecology, officially in 1980. And faculty affiliated with the former Family Ecology Department joined this new department of FCE. Then one of the functions, it's a long saga, one of the functions of the original FE department was to teach a core studies series of courses with emphasis on the concept of family as ecosystem. These three courses started at the freshman level and continued with a final program, of course, at the senior level. But as the curriculums in the other three departments became increasingly professional and technical, the students rebelled against taking these courses that forced them into a focus that they had no interest in. And so gradually, and this happened even before the department was terminated, the series of courses was trimmed from a structured three-course requirement to one elective course. And I think that that's still on the books, that one elective course, but I didn't check on that.
Do you remember the title of that, or what that course was?
I mean, I can look it up.
It was referred to as simply as, there were a series of three courses.
Okay.
And it was simply a, I think you'd have to probably call the human ecology, I don't remember all the details. Mm-hmm. One was family as an ecosystem, okay. And that may be the title that is continued for the elective. But teaching and administering the core studies program was a non-professional return job. There was little opportunity for advancement, and there was no research potential. So that any strong faculty who were at one time involved in this withdrew from any affiliation with the program. And despite very significant financial and time investment, the program was never successful. So that was one thing that was a loss that people had hoped would be successful. Then the Institute for Family and Child Study was established in the 60s as a collegiate program. The child development labs were located in that institute. And as with the design of FE, the theory was to operate interdisciplinary research studies using faculty both from the three, also from the three departments, as well as other university units, with focus on study of family and child. But only a few human ecology faculty saw the advantage of working within this sector, in part because of the time involvement and the inability to obtain funding for research for these types of research. And so eventually the child development laboratories were literally taken out of the building where the institute was and were relocated. And the Institute for Family and Child Study was moved from collegiate identity to university administration. It has a title and is now still in existence of Institute for Children, Youth, and Families, and is housed, if I remember, in Kellogg right now.
Is that administered by the provost?
Let me tell you, the unit retains affiliation with CHE, with the College of Human Ecology, but it's administered as a university institute. Mm-hmm. But this move, that shift, occurred after my departure as a dean. There was something else that happened which was interesting, and that is very significant changes occurred in the funding and organization of the national and state extension programs, the cooperative extension programs, that is still continuing. But that resulted in very significant changes in the kinds of services that were extended by personnel within the College of Human Ecology, especially extension personnel. And most of the changes there also occurred after my departure as a dean. Within all universities and academic units during the early 70s, student riots and rebellions and faculty rebellions occurred. Most of these agitations occurred because people were interested in having participation rights in governance, not only students but also faculty. And there also, because of the riots, there was built a considerable credibility gap between citizens and faculty, between town and gown, relative to units of higher education. There also was a considerable credibility gap that rose between faculty and administration. And I think, I've got, the 70s were troubled days for academic units. I think some of what we see today is carried from perceptions that started in the 70s of a kind of a discontent with what is going on and an attempt to change in order to make things better.
Did you see that in the students in your college?
Oh yes. And particularly saw it in the students at Ohio State. We had an honest to goodness rebellion by students at Ohio State, very similar to what happened here. Wharton, in fact, told me one time that when he first came to Ohio State, that he was had just gotten into Cowell's house, and he and his wife were getting settled, and they had gone to bed and were sleeping, and he said all of a sudden there was a banging at the door, terrible banging at the door. And he said he went, and there was some of the administrators who said, "You've got to come and talk with the students. You have to come talk to the students." And he said they were rebelling near the student union. Well, the student union is immediately next door to our building, or the human ecology building. And he said, "I got out there on the street," and he said, "they handed me a bullhorn, and I didn't know how to use a bullhorn." And he said, but you do what you're called to do when you're an administrator," mm-hmm. Which is true. It's true. And when I was at Ohio State, students rebelled there. They marched into McBride Hall, which was the hall that our program was predominantly in, and marched all the way around what I called the donut. We had spaces in the middle of the building and then faculty offices around the edge. And so there was a corridor that went all the way around. Marched all the way around the donut and into my office, past my secretaries and into my office, stepped on the chair that was at the end of my, this was a whole group of students, stepped on the chair at the end of my desk, marched across my desk, stepped down on the other side, and sat down on the floor. And after they got that done, I said to them, "Now if you'll just explain to me what it is you want."
Were they able to do that? Or?
Yes. They wanted a daycare program for women on campus. And I said, "If you will leave that with me, I will talk with administration and we will see what we can do." And so we were able eventually to establish a daycare program. And the one of the women who worked with me on that, woman of partial Indian, American Indian background, and she came by the other day and we had dinner together, and it was a pleasure to see her. Mm-hmm. and
Did she stay at Ohio State?
No, or? She's now in Wisconsin.
I see.
And is working on with some of the programs there, mm-hmm. Social service programs there.
Did you encounter anything similar when you got to Michigan State?
Less here. Mm-hmm. because it was primarily over. The riot was over. But I did find when I came here that the students wanted to have access to the dean. They wanted to talk over problems. They wanted to discuss issues and to have their ideas presented. And so we formulated two groups. One was an undergraduate advisory council, which had representatives from all the four collegiate units, or the levels of freshman, sophomore, and so forth, and plus males and females. And then we also established a graduate advisory council that met with the dean. And we met at least once a month. And they were very instrumental in achieving some changes. One of the things that I was interested in was developing a library for our college that was a reference library for students. And they, as the students, helped in the design of that laboratory. They literally came forward with designs of how they would like to have a library designed to serve them. And we were able to take those ideas and adapt them so that the central administration would also appreciate it. But we did do some of those things. We were able to handle several of the interpersonal relations problems that occurred when there were faculty that simply didn't want to communicate with students, with the exception of being in a classroom.